Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Novak. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from Susan Shand, John Russell, and Brian Lynn. Anna Mateo will bring us this week's words and their stories. Jill Robbins and Dan Friedel will have this week's higher education report. But first, here is Susan Shand.
The first abolitionist newspaper in the United States is returning to publication more than 200 years after its launch in 1820. The new version of the anti-slavery publication, The Emancipator, is a joint effort by Boston University's Center for Anti-Racist Research and the Boston Globe newspaper. Deborah Douglas and Amber Payne are co-editors-in-chief of the new online publication. They say the site will include opinion pieces, multimedia series, and other content by respected scholars and seasoned journalists. The goal, they say, is to redirect the national conversation around racial injustice. I like to say it's anti-racism every day on purpose, said Douglas. She joined the project after working as a journalism professor at DePauw University in Indiana. We are targeting anyone who wants to be a part of the solution to creating an anti-racist society, because we think that leads us to our true north, which is democracy. The Emancipator was founded in 1820 in Jonesboro, Tennessee, by iron manufacturer Elihu M. Bray. Its stated purpose was the abolition of slavery, as well as collecting important documents on the subject of slavery. The University of Tennessee holds a digital collection of copies of the newspaper. The Emancipator reached about 2,000 readers. Copies were sent across the South and to readers in several northern cities that were centers of the abolition movement. These included Boston, Massachusetts, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Those abolitionists were considered radical and extreme, Douglas said. But that's part of our job as journalists, providing these tools, those perspectives that can help them imagine a different world. Similar projects have also recently come online, including the North Star, a media site launched in 2019 by civil rights activist Sean King and journalist Benjamin Dixon. They say its aim is to bring back Frederick Douglass's important anti-slavery newspaper. The American scholar, abolitionist, and former slave was one of the most influential thinkers of the 1800s. Douglas said the Emancipator will be free to the public, and donations will support its production. The site will center on scholarly work and thought, not breaking news, she said. This is really deep reporting, deep research, and deep analysis that's scholarly driven, but written at a level that everyone can understand, Douglas said, adding, "Everyone is invited to the discussion." The publication also hopes to fight racist misinformation by using explanatory videos and written pieces, she said. The Emancipators' Amber Payne spoke of another major goal for the publication: reporting about solutions to some of the nation's most difficult racial problems. There are community groups, advocates, and legislatures who are really taking matters into their own hands. So how do we amplify those solutions and get those stories told? She said. Payne joined the project after working at BET.com and Teen Vogue magazine. "There's so much scholarly research that just doesn't fit into a neat 800-word Washington Post op-ed," she said, adding that the new paper is uniquely positioned. The Emancipator is centered on the Black community, but Douglas and Payne say it will also report on issues affecting other minority communities, such as the rise in crimes against Asian Americans during the pandemic. I'm Susan Shand.
Scientists said recently that fish fossils in the U.S. state of North Dakota are providing a deeper understanding of one of the worst days in the history of life on Earth. On a spring day 66 million years ago, an asteroid 12 kilometers wide hit Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula, leading to an extinction that killed off about three-quarters of Earth's species, including the dinosaurs. The event made the way for mammals, eventually including humans, to become dominant. The researchers determined that it was springtime in the northern hemisphere at the fossil site called the Tanis deposit when the asteroid hit. They based their study on bones from three paddlefishes that died within about 30 minutes of the impact that happened 3,500 kilometers away. Researchers found evidence of melted material in the gills, the part of the body fish use for breathing. The Tanis fossils also indicated that a huge standing wave of water buried local creatures alive. Every living thing in Tanis on that day saw nothing coming and was killed almost instantaneously, said Melanie Turing of Uppsala University in Sweden. She is the lead writer of the research that was published in Nature. Turing compared the fossils at Tanis to a car crash frozen in place. Several kinds of evidence pointed to a springtime impact. Yearly growth rings in some fish bones, much like those in tree trunks, showed increased springtime growth levels after reduced growth in winter months. Chemical evidence from one of the paddlefishes suggested that food availability was increasing as it does in springtime. Springtime marks a time of growth and reproduction for many organisms. This season is crucial for the survival of species, said study co-writer Sophie Sanchez of Uppsala University. In the southern hemisphere, it was autumn at the time, Sanchez noted, a season when many creatures prepare for winter. Dinosaurs, aside from their bird relatives, went extinct, as did major marine groups, including the meat-eating reptiles that dominated the seas. Among the survivors were paddlefishes and sturgeons, which survive to this day. The Tanis fossils helped the researchers better understand the events following the impact, which left a hole about 180 kilometers wide. The asteroid led to earthquakes, wildfires, and very large waves. These waves, carrying large amounts of dirt and other materials, hit the Tanis site within around 15 to 30 minutes after the impact, burying all the animals alive, including the fish whose fossils were studied. The dangers continued after that day. A cloud of dust covered the earth, creating a climate disaster that blocked sunlight for years. Study co-writer Jeroen van der Loop of Vrije Universiteit Amsterdam in the Netherlands said, "The exact timing of the impact determined the course of the mass extinction." I'm John Russell.
Rising beehive thefts in the United States have led beekeepers to use different kinds of technology to protect their property. Beekeepers in California are preparing for one of the largest pollination events in the world. The event involves beekeepers from across the United States transporting billions of honeybees to the state. California almond growers pay the beekeepers to use the insects to pollinate the state's most valuable crop. The bees will arrive in California as beehive thefts have been rising. The problem has become so common that beekeepers are now using tracking devices, cameras, and other technology to protect their insect investments. Hive thefts have also been reported in other parts of the country. One food company in Pennsylvania recently lost about 60,000 bees to theft at a pollination field. The problem is more widespread in California because of the huge pollination event. In recent weeks, 1,036 beehives worth hundreds of thousands of dollars were reported stolen from farms across California, state officials say. The largest theft involved 384 beehives taken from a field in Mendocino County in Northern California. This led a beekeepers' association to offer $10,000 to anyone with information that could lead to the hive's recovery. It's hard to articulate how it feels to care for your hives all year only to have them stolen from you, Claire Towser wrote in an appeal for help on Facebook. One day later, a person came forward with information that led officials to recover most of the missing beehives, as well as a piece of farming equipment. One suspect was arrested. Investigators also found other hive equipment belonging to Helio Medina, another beekeeper who lost 282 hives a year ago. Medina said the theft greatly damaged his operations. This year, he decided to place GPS trackers inside beehive boxes. He also attached locks to them and put cameras nearby. "We have to do what we can to protect ourselves. Nobody can help us," Medina told the Associated Press. Thefts usually happen at night when no one is at the farm and the bees are back in their hives. Many thefts are carried out by beekeepers or people involved in transporting bees. More often than not, they steal to make money and leave the bees to die, said Rowdy J. Freeman, a Butte County sheriff's detective who has been keeping track of hive thefts since 2013. The demand for bees has risen over the last 20 years as the popularity of almonds turned California into the world's biggest producer. The amount of land used to grow almonds has also more than doubled to an estimated 526,000 hectares. For beekeepers, the loss of a hive means the loss of income from honey production and future pollination, as well as the costs to run the hive throughout the year. Many struggle to make a profit under such conditions. Denise Qualls helps connect beekeepers with growers. She decided to team up with technology company BeeHero to equip hive boxes with GPS-enabled sensors. Freeman from the sheriff's department got into beekeeping himself after investigating his first hive theft. He advises beekeepers to use security cameras and to put their names and telephone numbers on the boxes. I'm Brian Lynn.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Today, we talk about two expressions involving letters of the alphabet. They both warn us to be careful, and they sound similar. But their meanings are very different. Here is the first one. To watch our P's and Q's. When we watch our P's and Q's, we are on our best behavior. We are careful of our language, too. So, no swearing. We do things politely and without causing trouble to others. The expression is something an older person might say to children. When you go to school, watch your P's and Q's and mind your teachers. There are several stories about how the expression began. Some word experts say it comes from people drinking in taverns or bars, places where alcohol is served. Bartenders would keep track of how much people drank by counting their pints, peas, and quarts, cues. Other experts say the expression comes from the classroom. School children were taught to be careful writing the letters P and Q, which are easy to confuse. And other experts say the phrase may come from the early days of the printing press. Letters were set in presses backwards, so they would appear on the printed page correctly. P's and Q's needed careful placement. Now on to our second expression, to dot our I's and cross our T's. To dot our I's and cross our T's means to be very careful. But it means to be careful about procedures. We make sure we have followed directions correctly and have done everything the right way. While it may have its roots in spelling correctly, we use this expression in many situations. For example, when the TikTok star read her contract with an advertising company, she was careful to dot her I's and cross her T's. She didn't want anything to fall through the cracks. She didn't want to overlook any small detail that may affect her business. If you are making a deal or spoken agreement with someone, a friend might warn you to dot your I's and cross your T's. Be careful of the small details. It is common knowledge that the smallest details are often where mistakes are made. So that is why it is important to dot your I's and cross your T's. Now let's hear two friends use these expressions.
Are you sure you packed everything?
Yes, I'm sure. Please don't ask me again.
Well, you usually forget something. Remember last time at the airport?
Let's not bring up that again. I won't forget my passport this time.
I just wanted to make sure that we dot all our I's and cross all our T's. By being careful and thorough, we save time and money.
Don't you ever get tired of being careful and thorough? Don't you just want to be crazy and impulsive for once in your life? Come on, throw away that list.
What are you doing? Give me my list back and behave. Seems like you not only have to dot your I's and cross your T's, you also need to watch your P's and Q's.
And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, the number of Americans going to college has dropped by 1 million. Researchers estimated the total could be as high as 3 million over the last 10 years. Education experts in the United States have recently talked about the reasons leading to the decline. They include lower birth rates, higher pay for most jobs during the pandemic, and the rising cost of a college education. However, education experts and economists are starting to think about the long-term effects if the drop continues. Some warn the decline could affect the U.S. as competing nations like China greatly increase their college attendance. Jason Lane is the leader of the College of Education, Health, and Society at Miami University in Ohio. He called it a crisis that is not widely recognized. With fewer people going to college, society is going to be less healthy, Lane said. It's going to be less economically successful. It's going to be harder to find folks to fill the jobs of the future.
Adriana Lleras-Munay is an economist from the University of California, Los Angeles. She said the growing education gap could also worsen existing divisions over politics, socioeconomic status, race, and national origin. We're seeing a lot more people moving into the very unlucky group instead of the lucky group, said Lleras-Munay. That will be very bad for them personally. It will start showing up in their health, their likelihood of remaining in marriage, you name it. And another expert, Awilda Rodriguez from the University of Michigan, observed that recent gains in reducing class-based and racial inequality are being wiped away. Among the most affected, researchers from the National Student Clearinghouse Research Center say, are children from poor families. And the number of young men starting college has also dropped by 10% in the last 2 years. The College Board says people who only finish high school will earn almost $25,000 per year less than people who finish college. Government agencies and the Pew Research Center note that those without college degrees run a risk of living in poverty or becoming unemployed. They are more likely to pay less tax, need government help, lead an unhealthy lifestyle, and die younger.
Jennifer Ma is a senior researcher from the College Board. She said, as older Americans retire, good jobs that require college degrees will remain unfilled. She called the drop in college attendance during the pandemic a really scary number. And Lane of Miami University added, what we're seeing right now is hospitals understaffed, supply chain concerns, schools closing because we don't have enough people to keep them open. As fewer Americans are going to college, countries including China, Canada, Korea, and Russia are investing more in higher education. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development notes that the U.S. is now 12th among its 38 member countries in adults with college degrees. Just 20 years ago, the U.S. was third. China is one country making progress. Since 2000, China has increased its number of college students from 7.4 million to nearly 45 million in 2018. The information comes from World Education Services. Another study from Georgetown University says that by 2025, China will be producing nearly two times the number of students with advanced degrees in science, engineering, technology, and math each year than the U.S. Jamil Salmi is a higher education expert who once worked at the World Bank. He said the lack of Americans with college degrees may lead companies to move businesses to countries with more highly educated citizens.
The college attendance crisis, as Miami's Lane put it, could result in some good news in the U.S. Some who study labor think employers will consider life experience a little more when offering people jobs. Monty Sullivan is president of Louisiana Community and Technical College System. He said companies are starting to think about a person's skills more than whether they have a piece of paper, meaning a college degree. The Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia recently found more job listings that pay above the national median wage are open to people without college degrees. At the same time, if the number of students stays low, the business of higher education will be hurt. For example, colleges will not need as many professors and support workers. About 4 million people work in higher education in the U.S. And a recent study from the National Center for Education Statistics showed that colleges and universities combined to spend over $630 billion per year. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Dan Novak.